Good evening, everyone. Welcome back to STN Live, or welcome for the first time, if this is your first time tuning in. Don't know. Either way, very happy to have you. This is the weekly show where we sit down with a member of the STM crew and take your questions while we talk about everything that's going on in the Small Town Monsters universe. This week, we're talking about the second episode of Strange Places, directed by and featuring Mr. Alexander Petikov. But we do have a couple announcements at the top of the hour. A lot of exciting news right now. The biggest thing in the STM world is Monster Fest 2. Which is coming up on June 28th and 29th in Canton, Ohio, this year. I got so used to saying next year. It's this year now. One of the incredible sponsors, try that one again. One of the incredible sponsors you'll have the chance to check out at Monster Fest 2 are our friends Drew and Lexi from Miles Menus and Mystery. Lexi is also the artist behind Final Girl Graphics. Check out both of those pages. They are awesome. This is an official endorsement. We don't do a lot of those on this show. There is a new episode of The Lore You Know featuring Mr. Les Odell, who is a returning guest to the show. Les is an author. He is an investigator. He's been featured in numerous STM productions. It's a great interview. You're not going to want to miss it. And speaking of podcasts, we have a new episode of House of Monsters coming for you next week. I'm not going to tell you what it's about, but you can find that out. You can find out the name of the episode if you listen to the first one. So there's a little hint for you. And speaking of upcoming things, we're almost at the end of the announcements, but a very big deal. American Werewolves 2 will be streaming on VOD finally this coming weekend. We were devastated to have to delay this by a couple of weeks due to our distributor delaying it. Not because we wanted to, but it's finally going to be out everywhere on VOD. Check it out. Stream it on your favorite device, etc. and so forth. Oh, and sorry, last thing, pre-orders for Hunting Grounds, Dogmen of the Lakes, begin next week on April the 9th. You can also get the physical copy on the 23rd, and you can pre-order your digital copy over at Amazon, actually right now, if you want to do that early. So, a lot of announcements tonight, a lot of fun stuff going on, guys. Thanks for bearing with me. Hello to everybody. Hello to our squad members in the audience. I see J.E. Roberts. Michael Tovar is here. Two new squad members to welcome tonight, Pamela Ryder. Thank you. Thank you so much. And our friend Julie Bug has joined the squad. Thank you, Julie. So happy to have you. And I see we have a bunch of other great people watching as well from different places. Don't know where that sentence was going. But without further ado, let's welcome tonight's guest. You know him. You love him. He's been on this show more than anybody else. Mr. Alex Petikov. Hey, buddy.
What's going on?
Oh, you know, just hanging out with you on a Wednesday night. Again, this is becoming a regular thing for us.
Yep. As you can see, I'm not in my usual setting, so I apologize.
Yeah.
Currently on the road, so
this is cool.
But I was glad to be able to come on tonight. So,
how much can you tell us about your present whereabouts, or is it secret? Is this a
Yeah, it's a little bit of a secret. Brian in Chewy in the chat there knows where I am because he's going to be joining us actually for the rest of the shoot here. But yeah, doing a bunch of projects, a bunch of strange places, some other stuff that I haven't really announced yet, some Beyond the Trail. Past couple of days, I've spent a lot of time in some coal mines. We'll put it that way.
Ooh. Leave it,
some abandoned coal mines. We'll leave it at that. So we won't say anything else other than that.
Very cool. We have a CRF-1000L space AUS watching from Yowie country down under tonight. Very cool.
Oh, very welcome. Cool. Just been watching a show from Australia recently, actually.
Very
Mr.
cool.
Mr. In-Between, for folks that might be familiar with it. It's a pretty cool show.
I've been doing some research focused in Australia lately, also concerning things I can't talk about yet. So, but anyway, oh, BH is watching from Ogopogo territory.
Nice.
There's our buddy. Hike with Mike is in the land of the skunk ape. So is Campfire Steve. Our viewers
are awesome.
My monsters tonight. Goodness gracious. Anyway, we're talking about something a little bit different tonight. Please do pitch all of your questions and comments for Alex in the chat. We love talking about Bigfoot. We love talking about Sasquatch here. But tonight we're talking about something a little bit different, like I said. So one thing I want to just say right out of the bat before I forget is that I loved this episode because it's serving hardcore old school History Channel. With all the artistic renditions and the effects and the narration, I was like, this takes me back 20 years ago when I would put on the History Channel binge war documentary.
Same here.
like modern Gargles was the only reality-esque show they had, and it was all War Dogs. And I was like,
I know.
Like, man, this is solid. So
maybe that's subconsciously what was my influence. Yeah, I grew up watching that stuff too. So
I loved it. Loved it, man. But then you get into the actual exploration and the on the ground and seeing this stuff up close, and I'm stoked on it. We're going to talk all about it. But I have to know right away, what brought this area and these two landmarks to your attention in the first place? How did this even happen?
Yeah, it's a good question. I was doing some research on South Louisiana. So I was planning a trip down there because I was going to do there's a video that's actually already come out, Beyond the Trail, Search for the Honey Island Swamp Monsters. That came out, I think that was the last Beyond the Trail that came out, I think. Double check me on that.
But, yes, it was Kenai Peninsula, and then it was Honey Island.
Yes, okay. Yeah. That makes sense. So yeah, I was doing that video. I knew I was going to have that plan to go down to Louisiana, but I was trying to figure out to do something on strange places, and I was kind of doing some research. I wasn't really sure. I was going to do something about the weird bayou stories. I had Heather doing some research. I just was kind of like all over the place, right? I didn't really know what to do. And then I was just like, well, it'd be cool to, I've driven down a couple times in the past when I've been to Louisiana. I've driven down to as far south as you can get to the Gulf of Mexico. I went to a place called Dulac, Cocodrie, which is in the further south Louisiana. But then I saw this road that goes into this place called Plaquemines Parish. And a parish is it's like a county in Louisiana. They just have a French system left over, French remnants of Louisiana's history. Plaquemines Parish, and there's a road you can drive all the way down. Like, you're getting so far, basically everything's being swallowed up by the Gulf of Mexico at that point. I was just like, I'm going to go drive down there. Maybe I'll incorporate that into video somehow. And I was just doing research on that region. And it's a very tiny strip of land that goes down, you know, some 60, 80 miles from New Orleans, just down. And that's where the Mississippi River actually comes out into the Gulf of Mexico, which is the Mississippi River, very famous, goes all the way up to Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Everything in between cuts through most of the U.S. And I learned about these two fortresses, and one of them, Fort Jackson, which I ended up going to, was pretty cool. You know, it looked like a pretty cool fortress to check out. But then I learned about Fort St. Philip. It's difficult to get to. It's abandoned at this point. You know, it looks like very weird. This area looks strange. There was all this history there. There's the first ever Mardi Gras celebrated there. There was multiple battles that have happened there. And the last known inhabitants of that fort was this cult of some kind. I mean, how weird is that, right? If that doesn't fit a strange place, it's a Spanish fort that goes to then being a French fort, then an American fort that's used in multiple wars. Then it was used as a possible, like a prison, makeshift prison for a little
bit. Is it a prison? Yeah.
You didn't end up getting used. And then after that, it ends up used as a, where a cult lived for like a decade. And they're a cult, but they were some kind of like a hippie commune kind of group. Cult may be a strong word, but they were a very unusual kind of group. It was, they were like the anointed ones or something like that. You know, it's cultish, right?
Well, if we're talking about strange places with a strange history, I mean, right. That fits the bill.
That fits the bill. And these two forts right across the Mississippi. So one of them is right on the kind of accessible side. The other side you can't get to other than with a boat. Now, I wasn't able to actually visit the fortress, but I was able to get over to see it from the air with the drone, which was really cool. But yeah, so there's just a lot of history there. So I immediately knew I had to get there. And I was just going to try to make it work. I need to get to this fortress, these two fortresses. And just, I thought that was awesome. You know, really cool kind of thing to cover for strange places. And that's kind of where that came from. Honestly, it was maybe a few weeks before I went on the trip that it even formulated it all. And I managed to somehow pull it all off. So it worked.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I loved it, man. I could go on about how much I liked it. Looked at the comments tonight and on the video itself. I think our audience definitely agrees. BH has a question. Always here with the good questions. Just a question for you, Alex. How do you choose what locales you go to for strange places? Do you have any criteria for each episode place? And that's a fun one.
Yeah, so that's, I don't know. It's kind of complicated. I guess I have something in my mind and I'll try to, like, so for example, with that specific Louisiana trip, I knew I wanted to return to the Honey Island Swamp. There was people that I met when I went last year and last year's video, like Dave, who's featured heavily in that video. He's somebody that he kept in touch with me and telling me stories of people that were encounters from the Honey Island Swamp. And then I had people reach out to me, like Michael, who's featured in the video. He was a former Secret Service agent. he reached out to me and told me about his encounter. So naturally I said, when I go out there, I want to link up. And some of the other researchers like Eden Boudreau, she had witnesses that I could talk to when I went down there. So that's what I chose to do. And then I wanted to do a strange places as well, you know, because there's a lot of weird stuff in Louisiana. So that's kind of why I decided to do that. But a lot of times there's just like where I'm at now, I won't even say what state I'm in, but I'm somewhere in the Appalachian region. I wanted to do some stuff out here anyway, because I had some locations in mind for strange places, some new stuff, coal mines, other weird places. I had a really interesting UFO encounter out here in 2019 in Pennsylvania that may or may not be the subject of one of the videos I'm filming out here. So there's another little teaser. So that goes with a lot of the UFO stuff we've been doing. It just depends on, I guess, what I have going on, or if I'm going out, if I'm doing something like a Beyond the Trail nowadays, I'm going to just try to do a strange places as well. But there are other places that I'm looking into strictly for strange places. There's certain places I'm going to be going to that I've wanted to go to for years that are just fascinating, that I feel fit the bill for kind of a strange place. And that includes, you know, stuff, abandoned locations, forgotten history, just weird stuff. So I know the series started out with the LBL, which people kind of are familiar with, and there's a little bit more of a cryptid paranormal kind of side to that. The second episode, there really isn't anything paranormal or cryptid related. It's just, it's a place that I find abandoned, and that's kind of, or I find fascinating because of its abandonment and its strange history. So The series will go in a lot of different directions, and I've said this from the start. There's a ton of different ways. You may have some episodes that have some Bigfoot or cryptid history or things in them. Others that just don't. There are places that are just bizarre and strange. And some of the stuff I've been doing here on this trip that I'm on now will definitely surprise people with some of the, you know, just the very weirdness of some of the stuff going on.
Well, kind of like we've said it on this show before, but you've essentially written yourself a blank check as far as creativity goes.
Right.
Like, you can go anywhere you want, which is great.
So it's great. Yeah, it's awesome.
Love the open-endedness. Yeah, definitely. Here's an interesting question from Hike with Mike. Is Honey Island in the Legend of Boggy Creek area?
No, Honey Island is very far south from Boggy Creek. So Boggy Creek is up towards Texarkana, Texas, and Arkansas. So it's kind of close to northern Louisiana, but the Honey Island Swamp is basically almost into the Gulf of Mexico. It's 45 minutes north of New Orleans, so very different areas.
They are both kind of in that southern region, and
yeah, they're in the south, but one is like a four-ish hour drive from the other, so they're not like geographically close, I should say. They are in the same general region, the southeast, but yeah,
you could go on a prolonged Sasquatch investigation in that area and very easily make it from Honey Island to Boggy Creek.
I did that one time, actually. I went on a road trip from Dallas to New Orleans, and we went to Boggy Creek, met up with Lyle Blackburn, hung out there for a little bit, went to Falk, Arkansas, did all that. Then we went down to Caddo Lake because there's a critter there. Then went down to South Louisiana, Tahoma, and then went over to the Honey Island Swamp. So it was all kind of a one trip. This was a few years ago, a number of years ago, actually.
That's a good trip, man.
Dang. Yeah, it was awesome.
That's one for the record books. Interesting question from Scott, which kind of leads into another question I have for you later. The one thing that I always wonder about, Alex, is how you can go into those creepy, dark places by yourself, like those bunkers, and be so calm.
I don't know. Maybe it's not a good thing, but I just kind of was curious to see what was in there. I had a feeling they didn't go on like some long tunnel system or something, because you could see the top of them from the road, and then there's water right behind it. So I figured it was probably just, I think what they turned out to be, had a lot of people tell me they're powder storage areas. So they were, they'd store the gunpowder and some of the munitions for the cannons and the guns, because they didn't want that in the fort in case it gets hit. It doesn't kind of light the whole place up. So
yeah,
that's why there are so many of them, and they're outside of the fortress. They're actually technically not in the fortress. So I don't know. It's, You got to see what's at the end of it, right? I think the curiosity trumps the fear in certain parts. And maybe that's, again, not a good thing, but that's just the way I operate. So,
because we were in the Land Between the Lakes recently together and had the opportunity to check out some pretty pretty creepy spots. Yep. But we had a big group with us with lights, right. and some people, you know, may or may not know very well how to handle themselves in dangerous situations. So I was just like, this is great. I'm on a little hike in the woods. But then we watch you do this stuff 100% solo. And I'm just like, or with one or two regional people. And I'm just like, what is this? And I'm pulling up my notes now because I have a question. I'm really glad Scott brought us here. And I want to make sure I have the timestamp. I actually wrote it down just to make sure. How did you feel? And this is at 38 minutes and 29 seconds in the video. How did you feel walking down this narrow, enclosed, very claustrophobic tunnel? What can go wrong in a situation like that? Is anything going through your head, or you just like everything else, just chill about it?
At that moment, I was a little, so it smelled really damp and gross in there. So I was kind of like grossed out by that. There's some of them that I went into that just did not smell very good. And it's a humid place. It's an enclosed chamber. There was a lot of old hornet's nests kind of on the roof, the ceiling, whatever. It looks like they've been ripped off or something, but that was a little bit on my mind. There's a lot of bugs. There's also lizards crawling around all over the place, and lizards are not like scary or disturbing, but you see something moving really quick in your light and you're just kind of thinking, oh God, is that a cricket? Yeah. Is that a bug? What is that?
It's a part of the whole vibe.
Kind of gross. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. That was probably my main concern when I was going in there, or just, you don't want to run into somebody. I didn't know how deep or how long they were going to be. So I had no idea what to expect. So I just kind of cautiously was going in and just going in with the light, see what happens. And if the coast is clear, the coast is clear. I mean, what are you going to do? So
if it's
there's
not
only one way to find out, right? Like, I'm not going to send a drone in there to see what is ahead of me. Not in that situation at least, but yeah. So I don't know, to answer your question, I guess I just kind of go with the flow.
I went to a semi-abandoned location in San Antonio once that had a haunting history, and it was under construction. One entire wall had been knocked out, and I walked in and I had my phone and I was taking video and kind of narrating where I was and what I was doing. And I turned around and there was a person in the corner sleeping on a mattress. And I'm just like imagining in my mind as I'm watching this, you know, this episode, you turning a corner and there being someone on a mattress, but thankfully that didn't happen.
That's not something you want to happen. So that's exactly what I'm worried about, though. And a lot of times, even in some of the Beyond the Trail adventures, some of the weirdest stuff we run into has been people out in these wilderness areas doing weird things, and that's kind of what you don't want to happen. So that's probably the biggest threat, biggest concern that I'm worried about when I'm in a place like an abandoned fort or wherever.
Yeah. And we should probably just say, now that I've shared that story, we should probably say in general that if you're considering exploring a location, do your due diligence, make sure you're not trespassing, you know, do like Alex and contact people in the area who can point you in the right direction.
Get permission. Do not just go into places. A lot of these places are not safe. Believe me, the past couple of days, I've been in some places that you will die if you do not, know what you are doing. I mean, we're talking about There's stuff in like mines and stuff that can kill you if you don't have electronic equipment to detect that. You know, I reach out to people who do this stuff a lot. Like, I was with a guy who's been doing this for 20 years. When I was in Louisiana, I was with, you know, boat captain who was able to take people out. You know, we respected the landowner permission to not go onto the property there, onto the Fort St. Philip, you know, so just do it the right way if you're going to do it. That's the approach I take. So don't be stupid, because your life is worth more than some stupid exploration, you know? So that's just kind of my advice.
Yeah, no, I think that's
a disclaimer. Really, don't try this.
Really important advice. What you've heard, folks, or what you've seen in this episode, and then what you've heard from me just now, are examples of how to do this correctly, pointing Alex's way on my screen, and how to not do this, wandering into places without contacting the property owner first. So exactly. Yes. Just some cool comments I want to throw up here. J.E. Roberts, squad member, that truly was a fascinating episode about those two old forts on the Big Muddy, Alex. Really cool.
Thank you. Yeah. I one thing that, again, that really struck me was the how much history had taken place there. Like the crazy amount of stuff that happened on one of the most historic rivers near the entrance of the river. I mean, these two battles, especially that took place at the War of 1812 and especially the Civil War, that possibly decided kind of part of the outcome of the Civil War. Confederacy lost their largest city because of that battle. And the city was left undefended after that because they lost at Fort Jackson, Fort St. Philip. So, that's, yeah, the amount of history that was there, again, I felt it was worthy of coverage, and just now how they're pretty much abandoned, especially Fort St. Philip, more so.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating, yeah. Tiffany Hillman, another great comment. Tiffany Hillman says, love and greetings from South Mississippi. Always glad to see someone like Alex doing awesome things in my territory. That's pretty cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, and Eli Watson, also a squad member, says, K and? Question mark. So, don't know, man. Don't know what to tell you. No. Hey, Eli. Good to see you, buddy. So a follow-up to what we were saying just a second ago, Sandra Ayote, that's just a cool name, says, Alex, you're making a great point about gaining permissions. Thanks for sharing that perspective, because I'm new to this stuff, albeit not new to hiking / paranormal stuff. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, I think it's just one of those things, because people see a lot of like urban exploration type stuff, and there's just, you know, you don't want to get in trouble going to some of these places. I've heard of people getting arrested or getting trespassing charges for going to places that are clearly marked. You know, there's still enough cool places out there you can check out that are legal to check out, but there's also places where you can get into, you know, with permission, obviously.
Yeah, for sure. Probably can't reiterate that enough. Yeah. Our friend Metallica 4567, good to see you, buddy, asks, Alex, have you been to the abandoned trains in Maine?
I actually have. If it's the same trains we're thinking of, I hope there's more than one abandoned train in Maine. But yeah, there's this cool
just
place.
One. Yeah.
Just one. This is a cool place. I was actually telling somebody about this today because we were talking about some of this kind of abandoned locations. This is in the Great North Woods of Maine. The North Woods, there is this old train that they used to use for logging, right? They would load up the trains with there's a lot of logging up in that area, and they've been abandoned for a long time. And the tracks are being taken over by the forest, and it's like completely abandoned. And there's just a place where there's four or five trains just in the middle of the woods. You hike to them and you get to it. It's a really cool location. Actually, I was there, I think in 2020, I went and explored that area. So
that could be a cool episode.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a kind of crazy area because it's so remote, you know, and you're like, how would a train be here? But back in the day, that was a big resource and economical enough for them to build a whole train to.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a question that you never expect to ask. Why is a train here? series of questions from random viewer Eli Watson. Oh, when are you going to talk about the rake? How about crawlers? What about Wendigoosen.
We got one coming up on Wendigoosen.
Yeah. Wendigoosen. Alex, when are you going to talk about Slenderman? And then follows up with Amex, when are you going to talk about how Slenderman? So
yeah, Slenderman. Yeah, I'm working on it. Believe me.
Yeah, we will talk about. Eli Watson is a Slenderman.
We're going to do a whole. We're going to do a whole cryptid, creepypasta series, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe someone will do that.
Bigfoot Society says Wendigoon.
Wendigoon.
I've actually seen that channel before. He's got a whole cryptid pyramid thing.
Oh, neat.
Threw some shade on some Bigfoot guys, though. It was kind of disappointing. Actually, he was throwing a lot of shade on the water cryptid. So if anyone's seen the cryptid pyramid or cryptid iceberg, whatever his video is, it's like, bro, come on. He says that every water monster is just a copy of the Loch Ness Monster. And he's like, threw mad shade on Champ and Ogopogo. So
he's stepping on the toes of both of your feet, bro.
We're gonna have to go to Pound Town on that one, and just, you know, it's like, yeah, can't do that, man.
Just have it out. Well, despite what just happened, whatever that was, our friend Nick, who has been hanging out with us for the last couple weeks, just joined the squad. So welcome to the squad, Nick. Thank you. Pleasure to have you. Appreciate your comments. Very insightful comments from Nick. So very cool stuff. Once again, I can't emphasize enough, despite whatever that just was. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
just kidding.
I know. It's like, I don't know why you'd want to become a member after that.
Like, if that's what did it, okay, guys, we can do more of that.
Yep.
No, we're having fun. This is fun. Julie asks, I'm originally from West Virginia, the area where the Hatfield and McCoy feud took place. Would you ever consider investigating that area? That area is really creepy and strange. That's an interesting idea.
I've heard of that stuff before in the past. That's one of those kind of like coal mining feuds. Yeah, I mean, it'd be cool to do something like that, but maybe I'll have to do a whole like Appalachian series or something. There's a lot of cool places all throughout Appalachia Appalachia. I know people get really upset about how that's said. I'm from the northern part of the Appalachians, so we say Appalachians, not Appalachia. But
oh, there's like a dispute over that. I thought there was just one way to say it.
Okay. Appalachia. That's how they like people correct me and say, "Oh, it's Appalachia" all the time. I'm like, you know, I'm from the Appalachians, but the northern part where we don't have that twang, we don't have that accent, so we just say Appalachians. But yeah, people get very feisty about that. It'd be really cool. West Virginia is just a really awesome state in general. I'd love to do more there. We've done some Beyond the Trail there in the past, but it would be great to do more. There's a lot of stuff I'd love to do in West Virginia.
Yeah, yeah. It's this weird paranormal vortex.
There's you got cryptid stuff, you got paranormal, you've got a lot of weird coal mining history, a lot of other weird stuff. So It's like infinite possibilities in a place like West Virginia.
Yeah, you could spend a year coming up with ideas, do a new episode every day and not be done. So for sure. Michael Tovar has a question. Let's see. Alex, get any creepy vibes like Fort Jackson being haunted or hear stories of the fort being haunted possibly?
So when I was there, I did ask Mark, who was showing me around, about, you know, any ghost stories. And he said some ghost hunters have done investigations there. But they had one point where I guess they were doing some investigation and a brick just randomly fell out and almost hit one of the guys. Now there's nothing paranormal about that. That they kind of stopped allowing that after that happened because that's sort of a liability thing. Like if it just falls on someone's head, which is, I'm glad it didn't happen when I was there. That's the extent of it. I think they said, I feel like he said something about off camera. He had told me some other people had claimed they had had stuff happen or whatever, seen shadowy figures, that sort of stuff. I don't know the extent of it, but I'm not really into ghosts very much myself. So I didn't really ask too much about that, even though today I was in a location that supposedly is haunted and we heard some weird things in an old jail where people were killed. So but I'm not seeking that out. Like, that's not something I'm really into.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. But I, specifically about Fort Jackson, no, I don't know a whole lot. I didn't hear a lot. But I would imagine there'd be some stuff because of the a lot of people died there. So
I was going to say, if you're going to assume a place is haunted, that might be a safe assumption to make. You know,
whatever haunting is. Yeah.
Yeah. If you believe in the concept of hauntings and you believe it has some connection to human activity, this might be a place to look. You know, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, could see absolutely.
That. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A few more questions from our friends in the audience. Please do keep them coming, folks. If you've just tuned in the last little bit, we are talking to Alexander Petikov about episode 2 of Strange Places, Ghosts of the Past. Hike with Mike has had a couple great questions for us tonight. Asks, do you guys ever come across glowing orbs in the woods? Me and my buddies have come across them, even set up game cameras, but never got the orbs on the game camera.
I mean, I've never really seen anything like that. I've seen like a UFO in Pennsylvania and I saw, you know, there were like lights around it, but I wouldn't really call those orbs. We did have an incident when we were in Florida with some people who were doing some Bigfooting. I was with Eli and Tate Hieronymus, and Tate was with a couple other guys and they claimed they saw some kind of blue orb fly through the woods. I wasn't in the group that happened to, so I can't say that I saw it or know what it was, but that was like the closest I've ever come to that sort of thing. So other than that, not that I can think of.
Yeah.
Orbs, yeah.
Say, I know obviously members of the orbs, but yeah. Yeah. I was gonna say, I know members of the crew have encountered them on a shoot. I don't remember what shoot it was. It was before my time. But if this is something you guys are interested in, and Hike with Mike is not an audience plant, but we do have two projects coming up this year on this topic.
That's right. Yeah.
Phantom Lights, which is being directed by Tyler Hall. Great. Going to be a really cool project. And then a book on the same topic, Lights in the Mist by Mr. Ron Murphy. So if you're interested in the topic of orbs and ghost lights, phantom lights, keep an eye on, you know, watch this space essentially, because we've got a lot more coming there. So.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Thank you, Hike with Mike. Appreciate that.
Good segue there, right?
Yeah, totally. Totally. Let's see. Oh, Bigfoot Society. Jeremiah's in the house. What's up, buddy? Good to see you. Would you ever consider going to Southeast Oklahoma? A lot of weird stuff besides Bigfoot down by Beaver's Bend, etc.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I still would like to go there to check out some of the Bigfoot history. You got to pick and choose. Like, I can only do so much. I have my plate full already pretty much for the rest of this year at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm doing 4 different films just on this one trip I'm on right now. So, and then probably in a few weeks, I'll be filming another one, another Strange Places. So, yeah, there's obviously so many places I'd like to get to. Oklahoma is just one of them that for some reason has remained blank on my map for a while. Hopefully I can change that at some point, but I'll definitely have to hit you up for some of those stories, Jeremiah. But yeah, you hear stuff out of there for a long time, out of Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. I'll meet you there. It's only about 8 hours from
me. Yeah, we'll do it up. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. I love the location suggestions. Let's see. I want to make sure I don't miss any questions before I ask one of mine, because mine are not as interesting. Oh, this is a cool one. I love these equipment questions. OPR357 asks, what is the best night vision camera to start with? Night vision being in quotes.
I would honestly go, I'm a big proponent of thermal cameras. I just like thermals. I haven't used too many night visions. Most of the ones I've used are like, I don't want to say lower grade, but definitely not like military tier night vision is like incredible. The Gen 2 stuff, other helmet mounted stuff, optics, like that stuff's cool. I've played with that a little bit with people who have given me access to it, and it's awesome, but not exactly. I think for Bigfooting type purposes, thermals are probably better, and just spotting wildlife, I just think it's a cooler tool. So I would stick with thermals. There's stuff like some of the AGM. I feel like they are a good company, kind of alternative to some of the FLIR stuff. So yeah, I would check out thermals. But if you're talking about night vision stuff specifically, if you're really set on that, probably not the right person to talk to. There, you could watch a lot of YouTube stuff about that to find out more.
Yeah. I like that this commenter put night vision in quotes, because there's different technology
you can
use in the dark. So I like that. Props for like, that. Props
like
for
yeah, that. Exactly. The night vision has a lot of good applications, but I think thermals are just cooler for wildlife spotting and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Alex let me use a thermal for the first time when we were in the Land Between the Lakes together. And it was really, really cool.
Very cool. Yeah.
I kept tripping on stuff. So
you lose. Yeah. That's the one downside. You kind of lose not mobility, but you get disoriented.
Yeah. It's not quite predator vision, but you do feel like the predator. You're just not nearly as coordinated as he is.
Just need Arnold Schwarzenegger coming out of the bushes screaming and you'll be complete.
Well, speaking of things coming out of the bushes screaming, I don't know. Julie Bug asks, do you guys have anything planned in the future with Jesse and Joe from Hellbent Holler? You guys were flipping awesome together. Well, I can tell you that Jesse and Joe were interviewed extensively for Hunting Grounds, Dogmen of the Lakes. They provided numerous research resources and quotes, and they will also be featured in the film Dogman Territory, Werewolves in the Land Between the Lakes, which will be coming out later this year. I'm not sure exactly when, but it looks like you guys won't have to wait too long. So, short answer, yes. As far as future projects, personally, I don't know. I'd love to work with them again, but yeah, that's what I got.
Yeah, I probably will. I've already talked to Joe a little bit about some stuff. I probably will be doing some stuff with them some point this year. So yeah, they're fun. They're cool. I mean, they're great. Like I get along with them because I think we all spend a lot of time in the woods and use a lot of equipment. So kind of bounce ideas off each other regularly about stuff. So I would definitely do more like Strange Places type stuff with them for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I talk with Joe pretty regularly, and pretty good chance we'll hear from them again at some capacity. Just not knowing anything for sure. It seems like
multiple things. Yeah.
Yeah. They are definitely friends of STM. So,
right.
Here we got another cool location. I love throwing these up, just little bits of history. Campfire Steve says Egmont Key at the mouth of Tampa Bay has old cannon emplacements and was a military town once. There's a lot of dark history there. might be a good paranormal location. Tampa is also very close to Clearwater Beach. This is for me, not Campfire Steve, which was the site of a fairly notorious cryptid hoax back in the, I want to say 60s or 70s. A guy put on these...
penguin shoes.
The penguin shoes, yeah. And Clearwater is where my mother's family is from. So that's an area near and dear to my heart. But yeah, man, we could do some more investigations in Florida. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I actually looked at that location, believe it or not, when I was in Florida recently. It just seemed a little too touristy for me.
It's very touristy
places. Yeah, a little more off the beaten path. So, it looked cool. I definitely would have liked to have gone, but I probably would have ended up swimming on the beach instead of doing what I should be doing.
Yeah, white sands out there. Beautiful.
Yeah, place. I've been to Clearwater Beach once. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Florida. Shout out to Florida.
Yes, sir.
Metallica 4567 asks, Aaron or Alex, has STM done an investigation onto the Great Barrington, Massachusetts UFO case?
No, I don't believe we have. No. I remember hearing something about it back in the day, but I never looked into it too much. It wasn't in On the Trail UFOs. I know when we did that, the New Hampshire stuff, they came up here. It was like back in 2019, and we did Betty and Barney Hill. We did the Exeter UFO case. I had some contacts with that kind of whole story. So we did that, but nothing else in really New England other than just the New Hampshire stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't sure on that one. We covered so much ground in On the Trail of UFOs and the two
films. A lot.
I was talking with Seth the other day, and I think they filmed in like 30 states for that initial series or something like that.
It was crazy. I remember Seth at the time because he did like a trip to LA. They did a trip to Arizona and then Las Vegas, Area 51, Sedona. And then Seth did this like whirlwind 2-week trip where he started out in Florida, went to Ohio, then drove with Shannon, Jason, Zach, and Adam basically from Ohio to New York, a bunch of stuff in New York. Then they came up to New Hampshire, and I joined them for a few days, and then they went. So it was just this crazy whirlwind. Within a week, they went from like New York City to the White Mountains of New Hampshire and everything in between. So it was a pretty crazy shoot. That was back in 2019. So that was a really cool, fun shoot. We had a lot of fun on that one.
Yeah. I keep hearing stories about that one.
Yeah. It was definitely legendary. Seth had these, one night we were staying in this little like ski chalet type lodge in the White Mountains, and Seth had these raccoons crawling around in the wall right next to him, and he was a little concerned about that. It was pretty funny.
I can't.
Infamous wall raccoons.
I have heard that story quite a few times. I think that story's been on this show. Yeah,
it probably has. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
For more on that, check out the previous editions of STM Live featuring On the Trail of UFOs. We've had a couple of those at this point. Alex was on one of them. So I will say also, we do have quite a bit of UFO content coming later this year as well. I won't flash the slides again, but we have announced On the Trail of UFOs season 2, and UFOs Revisited is in post-production right now. I think that's what it means when it's been filmed, right? Is that what that means?
Yes, after it's done, yeah, something like that. Yeah, once it's being worked on, right?
My name's Aaron.
It's editing.
Yeah.
The process has begun.
Yes. Yeah, that's happening. So yeah, more UFOs coming your way very soon. Another gear question. I really enjoy these, and I know our audience does as well. Sandra Ayote asks, do you have a short list of gear suggestions for someone just starting out on their paranormal / Bigfoot searches?
That's a good question. Honestly, something to document things with, I would imagine. So get yourself a little, even if it's you're writing electronically or, little notebook, something to take some notes in. Get yourself a good audio recorder, something you can decently record with for audio, something, a camera, a GoPro, anything that can just, you can document things. And honestly, a lot of the tools on the iPhone, and I talk about this a lot, but I mean, I've got a whole folder for stuff that I can use on investigations. We're talking about 3D scanning apps, Scaniverse. I even got like an infrasound detecting app. I've got Bigfoot Mapping Project app. You can do so many tools just with this one thing. And then, of course, maps, navigation, Onyx. Onyx is a fantastic app. This goes to maybe more strange places stuff where you've got like you're looking at a specific place, you want to know, okay, is this private land? Let me zoom in and I can have all the little parcels of land. Super helpful investment. So you can say, okay, I'm on national forest territory right now, or, oh, I'm on someone's land. I need to get out of here. You know, I'm trespassing. Like, you don't want to end up in that situation. So this applies for whether you're doing Bigfoot type stuff or paranormal or just exploring locations. You can find out. So again, phones, smartphones, there's so many tools built within it. 3D scanning, documentation, maps, mapping apps, all kinds of apps. So that's probably because everyone already starting out with that. You can do a lot with just the app.
Yeah.
Just the apps on the smartphones.
Yeah.
For tracks, like, that's probably the best thing you can do is the 3D scanning stuff, because it's like, that's amazing. You can get videos, you can get different angles. It's super useful.
Very cool. Yeah. I think there's a misconception that you have to spend hundreds or thousands of dollars on professional equipment.
Yeah. Thermals and all this other stuff. You don't. There's some basic stuff. Like, honestly, you could even record audio with your phones, depending on how good they are. You know, there's just a lot you can do with something that most people already have in their possession as is.
Yeah. And simple stuff too, which is also on your phone, like a short measuring tape, you know, that can be useful if you do run across tracks or something like that. You can do that with your phone. UV flashlight, maybe you can't do that with your phone, but you can get one for $5 on Amazon. You know, you don't need a professional tactical backpack. You just need a backpack. So
it'll look cool with a tactical one, but, you know, it's...
Yeah, yeah. Just depends what kind of documentary you're going to be.
The drip factor versus, you know, practicality. There's a fine line there.
yeah. But yeah, just I think that's a great question, because a lot of us don't know. You know, if you're going hiking, that's a great place to start. What do you take on a hike? And that's just from my very limited experience, but yeah.
Definitely. I've found myself using phone stuff more and more just because, again, you have... Like, if you find a track, anything I find interesting in the woods, like a track or anything, I will take my photos that I normally would with my phone. I would then take my 3D scans and get a 3D video, and then you have an extra piece of data to be able to look at.
Very cool. Yeah. Keep the questions coming, folks. We've got some time left in the evening still. Cool question from BH. I like this one. Alex, besides Bigfoot and Champ, what other cryptid do you have on your cryptozoology research bucket list?
No, that's a good question. There's a few, but they're all very dangerous and potentially deadly locations.
So, big surprise.
Yeah. Well, there's one. It's this, it's kind of guy I know named Ben Tejada Ingram, who actually wrote the foreword for his book. Last year, he did this book. One of his first books was about, it's called Little Nessie, which just sounds kind of like cheesy, but it's actually about this, these sightings of this Nessie-like creature in the northern Amazon, where you have these insanely large plateaus in parts of Venezuela and almost into Brazil and Colombia and that whole kind of area, that actually it's some of the areas that inspired The Lost World, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. And we're talking about these 1,000-foot cliffs jutting out into the jungle where you have the largest waterfall on Earth called Angel Falls, something like that. It's the largest vertical waterfall. It's just insane. That's just an area that screams it's a lost world. So there's apparently been these pretty interesting sightings of this thing. And even this archaeologist guy I talked to who had some kind of a sighting of this thing, and not the kind of person that would make this up. That would be something really cool. That's definitely on my list. Other than that, everything is like probably Bigfoot or other lake monsters. I don't know. I'm not like, this is the thing. I'm pretty skeptical of a majority of cryptids, right? Because I think a lot of them are folklore, misidentification, creepypasta type stuff. Like, you get the Thunderbird, the Slender Man thrown in the mix. Like, come on, bro. We calling that a cryptid? Out of place animals. I've done the mystery big cat stuff that I think obviously is real and exists. Like, they are real animals. But a lot of them are obviously kind of funny and silly. So I don't know if there's a real purpose to look into them, other than maybe you're looking at it like in a folkloric sense. You're covering a history, right? You're not actually thinking you're going to find some physical answers for something. But yeah, there's a few of them out there that are definitely cool. There's also like the stuff like the Mokele and Bembe and Central Africa and the Congo. I've always wanted to do something like that, but your chances of dying of malaria or hippo attack or civil war breaking out somewhere in Africa, probably not too high and not a great location to go, but that's something I'd like to do.
Yeah, yeah. Great question. I would really like to look into dogman sightings in Australia. I've seen a couple anecdotes recently that that might be a thing. So, you know, anyone knows anything, email aaron@smalltownmonsters.com about dogman in Australia. Just saying. We have another new squad member tonight. This has been a happening evening, folks. OPR357 just joined the squad. So thank you, nice. OPR357, and welcome. Pleasure to have you. I should have mentioned at the top of the hour, but squad members receive early access to all of our YouTube releases in ad-free 4K, no ads. So thank you for supporting the channel, guys. We really, really appreciate you. I'm not exaggerating when I say what you do makes what we do possible. So no one told me to say that. I just feel very strongly.
OPR had a previous comment I'd like to address.
Yes, I was going to say, we've got a question from our new squad member. Yeah.
Yeah, they said, I'm considering purchasing a Zoom H1N digital recorder. That's what I use. I have a bunch of those. They're fantastic. Thumbs up. Definitely recommend those. You can actually get them as cheap as like $80, less than that on Amazon. I've gotten ones with a full kit that comes with the carrying case, a little, kind of a cover to put on the microphone. For like $80 on Cyber Monday type deals. Look out for deals. There's always stuff going on Amazon. You can even go in like a bright red or blue color that nobody likes those colors. So those usually end up cheaper, but it functions just the same. Those are great. And then good software. Probably just honestly, you can get something like Audacity for free. Do the spectrogram analysis. Go watch stuff by Chris Spencer, David Ellis, Monongahela. They're audio guys. They know a lot more about that. You can watch some awesome stuff that they talk about, and like just with Audacity and spectral kind of analysis.
Yeah. Audacity is a great piece of software. Even just, it's what I use for all my audio stuff.
Yeah. I use it to analyze audio. It's fantastic. And just other stuff. You can put together things in Audacity as well.
Yeah. Just having something you can see those waveforms and pick out where things are occurring is really cool. Yeah. Great question, OPR357. And again, welcome to the squad. Thank you. Thank you. Hike with Mike has a couple interesting questions. First up, any plans for you guys to revisit the Green Swamp in Florida?
Yeah, so I kind of did revisit that area. That will be the subject of a future video. So keep your eyes peeled on that. It may be coming soon. So it was in an area kind of close to the Green Swamp. So
very cool. So yes. I like that. A little follow-up to our audio discussion from Nick, one of our other new squad members. Guys, also on equipment, FYI, they make thermal attachments for your cell phone. I do scam baiting, so Nick is somewhat of an audio expert, sort to say. Very good to know, Nick. We may contact you for some audio stuff in the future, but thermal attachments for your phone, I didn't know that was a thing.
I've heard of those, yeah. I've not been too impressed with them, because some of them, like I've seen the floor ones, and they're what, like, some of them are even a couple hundred, I don't want to say a couple hundred bucks, but like pretty pricey. At that point, you might as well just save that money and spend a couple hundred more and get like an AGM TM160 thermal, which is going to give you just awesome quality in the woods. And, it's a great entry level thermal. I at least from my experience with like the cell phone stuff, but he's saying I saw one about 300. Yeah, you can get the AGM handheld monocular thermals for like 350. So
not that much more.
I think that's probably a better buy in my view, as someone who's been using thermals now for a number of years. But whatever suits your needs, I guess. But that's just kind of my experience.
It's cool that technology is becoming more accessible though, because that's where we see more people taking on this kind of research, is when equipment becomes accessible. Yeah. Very neat. Another question from Hike with Mike. Question, do you get a lot of hair samples out in the field?
I've only found a couple that have been suspicious. And we filmed a few of those and put them in to analysis, and they've come back as something else. One of them came back as raccoon. Another one came back as lynx. That was in the Dark Coast series where we had somebody do a microscopic analysis. We didn't just find a hair and claim it was Bigfoot or whatever. We actually had somebody follow up and molecularly be able to examine it and tell us it is either a known species that they have a record of or something that they're not familiar with. So in both of those cases that we featured in some of the videos, but I haven't found too many hairs. I mean, I'm always looking, but I don't know. I think there's a lot, you can find a lot of hair and fur, and there's a differentiation there, which you have to be, I guess, familiar with, but collecting hair sample, you know, it's important to have some sort of a sterile environment for that. So gloves, and you put the sample in a paper bag, and, you know, just follow what other researchers would do and what more scientifically trained people would do if you're really trying to get something legit in that aspect. Yeah. The collection process. So in my case, I talked to people who were like Larry Beans Baxter, Alaska, retired police officer. So he used to collect samples like this for a living, right? Like, this is part of the crime scene collection. So you learn tips and tricks from people who've done that sort of stuff professionally.
Yeah. Mike Ann, Mr. Tactical.
Yes. Oh, I should say Mike Ann. Yes. Yeah. That's like Larry Beans Baxter, Mike Ann. Those are two guys I think about all the time with this stuff. Larry, because he helped us with some of the Alaska stuff, but Mike Ann, you know, I'm going out with him soon here in the future. And I was just out with him in the Green Swamp, actually, and he talked a lot about sample collection. So there will be a whole really good tutorial by Mike Ann in an upcoming video. So definitely look out for that.
And at Monster Fest too.
He will be doing an entire
trying to remember the name of the workshop, but yeah,
workshop's the word, right?
Doing a whole workshop on it. Yeah. Great question, Hike with Mike. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Our friend Sambo, who I've seen in the comments before, asks, ever been to a place where you felt a strong presence on arrival?
It's happened a few times to me where it's just like a really weird feeling, but nothing ever super crazy. One time I was actually in Europe at the time, and it was this church in the Czech Republic that was made with bones from people that had died from the plague. And this crazy story, this blind priest put all these bones. There's like thousands of skulls and bones all in this church. And I didn't really feel that well in that location. I just kind of felt like an overwhelming bad feeling. And I actually physically kind of felt sick. So I had to leave the church. Very creepy place. You can look at, it's like Bone Church in Czech Republic. That's the most tangibly I've ever felt that feeling.
Hmm.
But other than that, you know, there's certain places you get that just have a cool, like a very magical sort of feeling. Others that, I don't know, maybe have a darker history. You kind of almost, I don't want to say feel the darkness, but like you know that there's been horrific things that have happened in the place, and it kind of, I don't know if it's all in your head or something, but there's like a tangible kind of feeling or something that leads you to think that, oh, this place has a heavy presence.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been to a couple places where I immediately felt unnerved and wished to leave. And it was probably because of what I saw there. And, you know, I can identify with that feeling for sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think it also depends on who you're with. Cause like, again, thinking back to The Land Between the Lakes, if I'd been out there at night by myself, yeah, I'm going to have some different feelings from being with a crew and with seasoned investigators and outdoors people, you know? So,
right.
Yeah. Cool. Fun question, Sambo. Thank you for that. Mithril has an interesting question for us. Do you think the rewilding movement may lead to a rise in cryptid reports due to unfamiliarity? I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that is. Rewilding?
I have to tell us more about that, Mithril. I'm not familiar with that. Or I'll have to Google it when we're done talking tonight.
Because I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming it has something to do with, I don't know, areas becoming more wild. I don't know if that would lead necessarily in a rise, because if there's not people there, I mean, you're not going to have these reports, right?
Maybe it's people going to live in the wilderness, which I'm all about.
Like homestead. I don't know. I mean, we could look it up, but
I'll go do some wilding. No,
okay. Here, actually, rewilding is a progressive approach to conservation. It's about letting nature take care of itself, enabling natural processes to shape land and sea, repair damaged ecosystems, and restore degraded landscapes. Seems extremely generic. I don't know.
Interesting. Possibly.
Is that just letting nature become wild again? I mean, that's kind of what it sounds like.
Possibly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not difficult to make that leap if we're talking about, you know, a developed area adjacent to Bigfoot territory becoming wild again. I could see an increase. But
that's interesting because, you know, that, like, I think there's another comment there from Tristan, who goes by Kaiju Ninja, says it might have to do with reintroducing animals into the wild. That could be, because then you have somebody that is not familiar with a certain type of animal. They see this thing and they're like, whoa.
Oh, that makes sense.
What did I see? That's interesting. Yeah, I could actually see that. Absolutely.
Definitely. Yeah.
Like,
definitely.
So for example, in the Northeast where I live, those areas used to be heavily logged out. And, you know, a lot of the animals disappeared, mountain lions, the bear, the moose, everything. And since the areas have become reforested over the past century and a half, you've had moose and bear and all these things come back onto the environment. So I could see maybe, let's say, a moose wanders into an area that it wasn't for 200 years because of deforestation, and then somebody sees it and they've never seen a moose before. I don't know, this is pre-internet or whatever, pre-common knowledge. Like, oh my God, what did I just see?
Yeah.
And that creates some kind of crazy cryptid that is one of those old logging stories or something.
Yeah.
Because there's a couple of them that look like moose. There's a couple of those kind of lumberjack tails that look like moose. I don't know if that's necessarily a cryptid, again, more folkloric, but you can kind of see how some of that stuff might be formed by people not being familiar with a certain creature that lives in an area.
Very cool. Yeah.
But I feel like it's nowadays, I mean, most people know what most animals look like. There's nothing that are very exceptionally unusual. Like if somebody saw a platypus, they'd probably be like, that was very weird. You know, maybe everyone knows what that is.
Imagine if you did not know what a platypus was and then you saw them. That's going to blow your mind. You're going to think this is fake. There's no way.
But you see like a moose or you see like a coyote or a wolf. I mean, most people in the world are generally going to be aware of what some kind of canine-like creature. But you could have like a Texas chupacabra type thing that apparently then turns into its own thing, or a bear with mange turns into, I saw this horrific demon looking creature, because a bear with no fur on it is terrifying looking.
Absolutely, that's a theory.
Nightmare fuel.
It is, it's terrible, it's a bad thing. Like,
and it's not a good thing for the animal. Like, it's obviously it's a horrible thing for the animal because it's not healthy, but it would look very scary. It's like the Montauk monster, right? That's sort of cryptid, but it's some kind of washed up animal on the ocean. It just looks very strange. It doesn't look like anything normal.
I think the general consensus is that it was probably a raccoon, but
like degraded.
Like halfway through decomposition and also very waterlogged.
Right. But bears, I can see that kind of thing happening with rewilding.
Yeah. Bears with mange have been pointed to as a possible explanation for some dogman sightings as well.
Right.
So, and Mithril does clarify by saying here in the UK, rewilding is also about reintroducing animals that we have wiped out, for instance, beavers, lynx, bears, and wolves. So,
Right. Yeah, that could, again, if people aren't familiar with it, but I think it could happen. It's possible, because that's what a lot of these cryptids are, misidentifications, or people just being unfamiliar, or seeing something at a weird angle, or a creature that just looks strange in a quick movement, and then it suddenly turns into a whole kind of, it's got its own mythology around it.
Yeah. Very interesting. Always appreciate the questions and insight from our audience, guys. We do have one last question for the night. Our friend Nick asks, do y'all have a Discord server? We do not. We've talked about it a couple times. If that's something you guys want to see, let us know. Never say never, but we do not have a Discord server presently. You can connect with us on social media, pretty much every social media platform. And you can send me an email at aaron@smalltownmonsters.com, just for whatever reason, if you want to. Well, that brings us to the top of the hour, Mr. Petikov. Thank you for joining me once again. I appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was fun. I feel like we talked a lot about cryptids and other stuff too, but it was a good conversation. I feel like I've heard of the rewilding stuff. I thought that was just called, allowing the nature to kind of reclaim areas, like what's happened again in the Northeast where I live. I didn't know there was a specific term for it, but hey, you learn something new, right?
It may be one of those things that has different uses in different areas, but I love that. I think that's a really interesting discussion to have at the end of the hour, is just, this possibility of cryptids crossing over with animals reclaiming old territories. Very interesting. Very interesting.
Definitely fascinating.
Well, thank you everyone. Once again, we will see you next week for another show, another guest, same time, same place. Don't know who the guest is yet. I'll be honest. I don't know, but we'll find out. We'll let you know. And we'll see you next time on STM Live. Good night, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Presented by the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. You can find out more about this and other network shows, as well as Small Town Monsters films, books, and Monster Fest 2 at smalltownmonsters.com.